Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders, get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool.
I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie.
On today's episode, we chat with Justin Dietrich. We chat about his experience as a shop teacher, growing up in the trades, and inspiring younger generations to get creative and work with their hands.
Please enjoy our interview with Justin. So Justin, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
It's so cool to be able to just talk shop. Specifically this time, because all three of us are shop teachers, so this might, I don't know, maybe we'll get on some tangents about budgets or something that no one else will be able to relate to. But yeah, it's awesome to have you on.
Yes, thank you. So I was looking at Workbench Con. I've kind of been intrigued by that, and I noticed you were one of the speakers, and then I reached out and found you on their speaker list and kind of was looking at your credentials. I've been following you, and you do some really cool stuff with your own kids and with your classes. What got you started in this trade?
Ooh, well, what got me started in the trade, I've got to go way back. It's actually just kind of weird and ironic because I'm applying for a scholarship for our school right now. But way back to the beginning, the first thing I can remember is just being on a job site when I was really young. My dad built houses when I was growing up back in the 90s. And I remember getting pulled around from job site to job site, building and framing. Like, and we lived in an area that was booming in the 90s, and I just remember being on streets that where there would be four or five houses being built, you know, all in one cul-de-sac or whatever, you know, back in the early mid 90s when things were going really well. And I always was up for it because that meant I got to take my bike up there, and I grew up out in the country on gravel roads, so we got to ride on like the paved roads, and they had curbs, and those were like automatic ramps. So
the fresh pavement. Oh, that's the dream.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. So, so yeah, that's back to the beginning. It progressed, you know, like it started with one day. I think dad was like, "Hey, grab a broom," you know, and it was, "Hey, clean this up, go throw this scrap pile over here." And then after that, it turned into, "Hey, grab a tape measure and mark out 16 inch on center lines on these sheets of plywood." And then I remember, you know, all of a sudden one day I was, to tell you a quick funny story, I'll give you the short version, but he was framing walls on the second floor of a house. And there was a stack of like 250 studs down on the first floor. And I think I was like 10 or 11 years old at the time. And he told me, he goes, "Hey, I need this stack of studs up on the second floor," because they were building walls up there. And I was like, "All right." So, you know, I'm taking three or four at a time. And it literally took me all day long to carry all the studs up. It took me all day. And at the end of the day, we're sitting in the truck and I'm just exhausted. And he hands me a $20 bill. And I was like, Are you serious? And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "You earned it, man." He's like, "You earned it." And I couldn't believe that he had paid me $20 for that. And it's like, well, when I do the math now, he paid me like $2.50 an hour. So, I mean, he got away pretty cheap on it.
That was gold for you, though.
Yeah, I didn't know any different. He saw me coming from a mile away, I guess. But
you mean I can make money for this?
Yeah, right. So then eventually it turned into like grabbing studs and learning how to read a crown or bow or twist in them. And then it turned into laying out walls. And I started maybe building on my own a little bit when I was 16, 17, like with him basically. And then when I was 20, I started taking on side jobs. But just kind of like you guys, I was going into college and at the same time, so getting my teaching degree. And, you know, graduated with my teaching degree and got a teaching job for a couple years as an ag teacher. But I've always stayed with construction and woodworking. I've always kept that in my back pocket. As you guys are teachers, so I use that to my advantage in my downtime, and like over my summers, I keep going, and I enjoy it though. I don't really look at it as either a negative thing or something that's bad. I just like being around the trade. I like being outside. I remember sitting in high school in the late 90s and our teachers telling us, oh, you're all just going to go into computers, that you just need to go do that right now and get out of all this other stuff. And I remember sitting in class going like, I can't do that. Like, I will not be able to function, you know? And so I'm just kind of like a high energy type person that I got to be moving all the time. And construction has always been, you know, when woodworking and working in the shop has always been that thing for me that's kept me going. So I ended up being a building trades teacher for 10 years, where we would build a house and then we'd sell it at the end of the year. I'd do that with about 25 high school kids a year. And then the last 4 years I've been woodworking, like in a more traditional woodworking shop.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. So over the course, did you have the same, I'm assuming it's a semester kind of system and two semesters a year, and you have like, you said 25 kids, were they with you the whole year? And how did you get that start? Like, that sounds like a logistical red tape nightmare in today's day. Like, that's incredible that you did that and you sold it at the end.
Yeah. It, as far as the building trade thing, now when I came in, I got hired for that job in, trying to think here, 06, 07, 07, 08. In 2008, 08, 09 was my first year doing that job. And I think that building trades program had been around for 40 to 45 years at that time.
Wow.
And so it was, I mean, luckily the infrastructure for how it worked at the school was already in place.
Yeah.
So it's not like we were starting a program. The big difference for me was going from, I had been a classroom teacher as an ag teacher for 2 years. And then it turned into, the best way I can describe it is I was basically a general contractor on a job site and the students were the laborers. And like, now kind of our goal was that we wanted students to participate or be involved in as many steps along the way from foundation to finish as possible. And we didn't do everything, you know, we didn't do the foundation. We usually would not do our concrete. Sometimes we would do some little flat work or something that'd be easy. But you know, stuff like that, we hired out all of our plumbing and HVAC, and we hired out all of our drywall. We did drywall 1 year and I was like, I will never do this again.
The infamous drywall.
Yeah.
It was a long, frustrating year, but basically, yeah, that's the best way I can describe it is, I was a general contractor, and it was, you know, I would have a few classes a day that would come out to me. And then our job, like the school, I mean, to put it honestly, the school had to have a lot of blind trust into me.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they were basically handing me, you know, $120,000 worth of purchase orders, you know, to get through the materials that we were going to build with that house. And then I needed to have a house that they could sell for that money, at least, mm-hmm. at the end. So, but we never had an issue selling because, you know, we were building $150,000 to $170,000 houses and we were selling them for $110,000, $120,000.
Oh, wow. You know? How was the buy-in with the students over the whole process? I mean, that seems kind of like when I think of trying to do kind of a collaborative project with the community or get involved, to be able to show the students every step. Lots of times it's, okay, we're going to frame walls and then you leave, or a different type of woodworking skill set, but to be able to have them do everything and expose them to it, that's kind of cool for them. And even for you, like, how did that go along for you?
Yeah, that, and you know, I came in really well versed in carpentry and framing. I mean, that was my strong suit. I was pretty good at trim out and as a trim carpenter, but I mean, I had done some roofing, but I wasn't great at it. I had done some electrical, but I wasn't great at it. And so along with my biggest thing was when I got to a subject or, you know, a subcontractor that I didn't feel comfortable about either teaching or making sure I was doing everything, I would reach out to some local builders who were good at those things. And I would bring them in and say like, hey, you know, can you give us a demonstration? Can you come in for a couple hours and give us a shingle demonstration? Or, you know, can you come in and show us how to just run some wire today for some electrical and then come back in a week and show us how to, you know, hook up outlets and switches. And we would do things like that. So that helped me a ton because, you know, other than framing and some trim out, I was not competent past, you know, a lot of the other things. And then, but for the students, what was always kind of interesting was you would see some students that would excel in one subject area, but then maybe 2 weeks later, somebody else was excelling at something else. And so that was always kind of interesting to see which students, you know, really got into the framing, you know, or, you know, sometimes, you know, a student might be a little apprehensive to use a circular saw, but they'd get up on a roof and they would do really well there, you know? So it was always interesting to see the progress throughout the year.
Kind of like almost learning as you go in a sense, both for you and the students. I find that happens lots in probably all of our shops, and it's need to be okay with it, right? We don't know everything. Yep. Sometimes we're expected to be able to know everything, and you need to utilize your resources. And, you know, sometimes I find the best things in the shop is learning with the students and figuring out how to do it together. That's kind of a cool feeling too.
Yeah. And as you guys know, being shop teachers, like you just hit the nail on the head, like that, you know, the longer you do it, the more things you pick up, the better you get at the process and the better understanding you have of, okay, what are the points that I really need to hit on this subject, like along the way to make sure that they end up with a product at the end that is, you know, that they've picked something up. But it's hard, especially when you're starting out and you don't have all that knowledge. You don't have all those years of experience. You don't know who to reach out to and who to bring in. But you're right in saying that a little humility goes a really long way. Yeah. Like I remember, especially early, telling students like, I'm not very good at wiring, so I'm going to bring in somebody who is good at it and we're all going to learn together, you know? And, you know, that 15 years later, I'm pretty good at wiring now. But, you know, so I kind of used it to my advantage to also, I guess, for lack of a better term, I was a student some days too.
Well, it's PD that you're getting paid for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right?
Great.
Every day.
That's exactly it.
You're building that plane in the air when you first get started, and then you're just diving in.
I like that.
Yeah, it's
building the plane in the air. I like that.
Yeah, especially COVID. I've heard that term in education a lot last couple of years because no one knew what the hell was going on.
You're also building relationships with community too, right? Which I think is important, and there could be a potential job opportunity for students or hey, somebody, I'm looking for a framer, you know, a laborer for an electrician, and you have a set of students that, you know, maybe know them or they've been around. So I think that's nice to involve community too for you and students as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I still, even to this day, I still get phone calls. I haven't been the building trades teacher in 4 years, but I still get phone calls like, hey, from those local contractors, like, hey, do you know anybody graduating this year? Do you know anybody looking to, you know, stay, you know, keep a job and stay in town or anything like that? So
Yeah, I get the same thing, and Corey does too. And it's like it's kind of I've said this before when I'm speaking with different industry guys that I want to kind of bring on, put their banner up in the shop or something like that. Like if I was a business owner in industry, I'd be throwing money at the school that who's had the program doing what I do, right? Teaching kids how to do what my business does. Because in 10 years, when all my old pros are retired, then who do I have? You know what I mean? And then I could work with the teacher and get them to teach industry standard stuff or things that I need them to know. And then that cuts my overhead costs and that cuts my training costs down and my risk and all that stuff. And I just don't understand why more industry folks aren't investing in these school programs. Do you find a problem with that? Or is that just up here?
I do, but I also believe this is swinging back the other way. I think we're in the middle of it moving back. And to be honest with you, I think COVID in the last 2 years has sped it up even faster, moving back the other direction. Because, I mean, obviously, like when you look at what, you know, now that we've had 10 to 15 years of people graduating college and can't find a job, but they have $100,000 in college debt, you know, and then they turn around and see their buddies who went to a welding school and, you know, had maybe $8,000 or $10,000 in debt and are making 30, 40 bucks an hour right out of high school, almost, you know, an apprenticeship. Like, it'll take some time, but I believe those things are moving back in the other direction. And like to kind of like to give a better picture of where I teach at. And like, I think one of the amazing things that my school does, so I'm in Lincoln, Illinois. It's a town of about, I think it's about 11 or 12,000 people. And a school of 800, and we still have the building trades program, which I taught. We have automotive, we have electrical, we have welding, we have metalworking. Then we have a CNA program. We have cosmetology. We have I don't know what it's called now, food and consumer science. We have wood shop. We have wow. I mean, we have so we like it's like
that's and awesome.
Yeah. And I'm the department liaison. And so, we've added fire science. We have criminal justice. So like I'm talking about kids that aren't interested in going to college and they can at their high school, they can go, you know, hey, I want to be a cop someday, you know, and they can go take that class or I want to work with metal or I want to work with wood or I want to cut hair, whatever it is, they can go do those things in our school. And we've been adding programs in the last few years. So
that's cool. And even the opposite being true, like as far as, okay, I think I want to cut hair. And then they try it and they're like, okay, this isn't for me. And then they haven't wasted years of their lives and semesters worth of money. Yeah. Like we're setting kids up for success that way. Like it just makes sense.
Starting them early.
And I always used to tell students in building trades that like, look, my goal for them was to find one thing that they liked and that year. Didn't mean they had to go do it after high school, but just find one thing they liked. But I told them, I was like, you might love framing and you might hate roofing. And you know what you're going to learn? You're going to learn that you never want to become a roofer or an electrician. And I still tell my students today, like even in the wood shop, I tell them like, hey, if you end up enjoying woodworking, this is great. But you know what the most important thing you learn how to do in here is that you're going to learn to work in a shop around people in a loud setting around dangerous tools. Like all of these things will translate to eventually leading into a good job, you know, or maybe you decide that you don't want to work in an environment like this, but great. Now you've learned that. Mm-hmm.
Or even pick it up as a hobby on the weekend in your own, in the garage, or, you know, there's so many opportunities. And speaking of kind of starting off at a young age on your Instagram, it looks like you involve your kids quite frequently on your builds and stuff. And how, being, I guess you were involved with your dad in framing at a young age, is you trying to pass along those kind of soft skills to your kids?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that's a pretty good way to describe it. Like, I don't know, being like when it's your own children, it's like, I just enjoy working with my hands so much, just like you guys do. And I want to pass that on to them. Like that's the, I don't want them to be afraid of tools, or I don't want them to be afraid to go out into the shop. I want them to think creatively. And, but along with that, like I want it to be, I don't want them, just as you were saying a little bit ago, I think for, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, I think it was probably looked more down upon, but I don't want them to ever think that they're above any of that work. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. At the end of the day, yeah. Like if, okay, maybe, you know, maybe one of them wants to go work in finance or whatever. I don't care. Like go do it. But you know what? Maybe, as you said, maybe they come home on the weekends and they want to work in their own shop, or maybe they want to get a welding or whatever, work on cars. I don't care. But to me, that is a mentally healthy thing to be able to do in your life, no matter what your career is to be able to create with your hands, work with your hands. And again, not be afraid to like get your hands dirty or look down on people who do, mm-hmm. you know, and realize like, look, we're all just, you know, we all have our own talents and our own different levels of intelligence and certain things. And to me, that's the most important thing that I can teach them.
I love that. That's interesting. So I got a question about young people and maybe going back to schools, but have you noticed in your time being a teacher, a shift in the openness or the like excitement to work with your hands? Has it gone up or down? And this idea, all the devices and social media, I sound like an old guy now, but I find both. In my class, I find there's either kids who like are 100% in or they couldn't care less. But also on the other hand, I have when these kids lay down a bead for their first welding bead, and I'm like, and it's awesome, first time touching a welder, and I'm like, is this because of the video games? You know what I mean? Like, what has been your experience with like the new? I don't want to say new generations of kids, but I don't know how else to say it. Like, as you look back, the openness to learn new skills, to get dirty, to be humbled, like has that changed or has it been kind of consistent throughout the years?
I think probably over time you've seen, and I'm talking 40, 50 years ago, you're probably seeing less kids who come in what I would call like competent. Mm-hmm. You know, that just have that base knowledge of like working with tools, like their parents have worked with them. I think there's probably a much lower number of that.
They're not tinkering anymore kind of idea.
Yeah. And just kind of like, I mean, I grew up on a farm and, you know, I'm raising my boys on a farm. And so like the way of life here is pretty common that like we're working on a tractor, a mower, your vehicle, you're like, we have to garden. We have to do, you know, there's lots of stuff like that, that just come with the lifestyle. And when there's a lot less people living that type of lifestyle, I think those natural, just things that you just naturally learn living like that, those things are gone. Or I shouldn't say gone, but you just see them less likely. But what I would say though, and I feel like I've noticed an uptick in the last year or two of working with their hands. Like there's a definite group of kids who I think kind of took recognition of the last couple of years, 2 years ago when we're all shut down sitting in our homes, and all of a sudden they kind of realized like, hey, I like working with my hands, you know, and I didn't like sitting at home in front of a computer. I think there's a group like that. I also, and I'm sure you guys do this as well. I feel like part of my job as a shop teacher is to not necessarily teach to like an extreme depth in one subject, but to try and show as many, I don't know if the word is possibilities, but as many opportunities as available. A perfect example, I'm still not very good with the CNC machine, but like we have a smaller, like 4-foot by 4-foot CNC machine. We also, we just bought a Shaper Origin. Have you ever seen these?
Yeah, I got one at the shop. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're phenomenal.
And yeah. And I mean, kids just watch it and they're like, they want to do it. You know, it's like, they just like a perfect example is that like when kids will walk in and, you know, naturally they want to get on their phones and they want to just, you know, that's the natural reaction for them to just go to. And when you can get them to put their phone down without asking them to, yeah, like that to me says something that you've engaged them. And so what I've seen with like the Shaper, for example, is that kids see it and all of a sudden there'll be a group of kids around wanting to like see how it works. And then when they see kind of how easy the software is to work with, and they are computer inclined, I mean, they're very comfortable with jumping on any type of software, or like with the Shaper, you can download their, you know, you can go to their website and design in the lab and then pull that back up. I mean, you know, it's pretty cool. On the flip side of that, the other thing I have seen is that I'm timber framing with my advanced students right now. So, okay. So the year's 2022 and I've got a Shaper Origin and I've got students engaged with that, but we're also timber framing with mallets and chisels. Yeah. And like, and to true tools. Story, one of the mouthiest, yeah, one of the mouthiest, like cockiest kids that I have in class came up to me the other day and he's like, is there anything I can do with a chisel right now? Like, he's just like, he's enjoying like working with a chisel and slick so much. He just wanted to go, you know, use that tool. And so it's like, when you can balance that a little bit, like, hey, here's this 200-300 year old ancient, like, you know, trade that is pretty neat, but, and you tie all of that together, like if you can engage them, then I think you're doing something right. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So you just got the Shaper Origin and previously had the 4-foot by 4-foot CNC.
Right. So I got the Shape Oco CNC like 3-4 years ago. I think it was one of the first things I got. And then just, literally like 2 months ago, we got a Shaper.
Oh, wow. I got a Shaper last year. And then just received a 4-foot by 4-foot CNC probably a couple months ago. So I had the Shaper Origin, was great. The kids were, I found, engaged. And I part of it, I think, is the interface looks like a phone, right? And it's kind of like a video game thing, which I loved. For me, a big learning experience was trying to convert the images in Adobe Illustrator and get them into SVG. So that for me was a little bit of a learning curve. And now with the big format CNC, that's even jumped up another level where kids are like, oh, this is so cool. Like, we do quite a bit of epoxy and you can do logos and different things and crib boards, and like to see them so engaged with that. But then, like you were saying, to give them a chisel or something or another hand tool. And I've got some kids doing hand cut dovetails right now. And some of them, for the most part, they're interested, but it's just, if you can try and find that balance of trying to engage students or anybody really in life, trying to pick up a passion or a trade. And I think you can, it's that whole juggling act of how to keep them engaged and kind of give them little tidbits, so it kind of gets their creative genes going and kind of builds upon that.
Well, and it's a double-edged sword, but if you can use social media correctly, I mean, it is a phenomenal tool.
Mm-hmm.
There's no disagreeing with it to me that the possibilities that we have now at this time in our lives of being able, I mean, even this, you know, me being able to jump on this podcast with you guys today was made possible by social media.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so my thought is like, okay, I want to get kids to like dip their toe in the water with me in the shop. And like, I want like their experience in the shop to be like that, where like they're trying different things and seeing different things. And all of a sudden, maybe one night they're on Instagram and they see a Jimmy DiResta video or something like that of cutting out an acrylic dinosaur, you know, and then they're epoxying it. And then they're like, wait a minute, had a CNC machine, you know, and then they start thinking about, okay, how could I do something like that? Or maybe they see a video of somebody standing in a timber frame, just like we did, or cutting hand cut dovetails. And all of a sudden they're like, so now they're thinking about those things outside of school, and they see somebody, like you said, like an influencer or somebody like that, that is really talented. And now you've pulled them, now you've taken it from just sitting in class, you know, to now it's maybe a lifestyle for them. And I think that to me is one of the coolest ways that, that we can use it. And I, it's definitely not going away. So you better learn how to use it and lose it, use it in a positive way.
And yeah. And by that, you're showing them how to use it, right? You're modeling that for them.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like, cause I just got, I set up a class, welding fab Instagram, and I got kids, they're like tagging the Instagram account in all these different like welding, walking the cup and all these like, hey, we should buy this. We should buy this TIG, this TIG attachment for our TIG machine. And we should try this technique. We should, and it's pretty cool. Cause they're so they're spending their own time doing this stuff. Yeah. And they're just getting started. Right.
And that's exactly right. And now you've got them. Now they're already talking about how they can make the class better.
Yeah.
Like name a time in school when students were interested in trying to make their class better.
Yeah.
Like, you
know, how do we get paid for this is my question.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I just got a bunch of new drills and stuff and trying to set up some organization and how to, you know, wall hangers and stuff. And I was kind of stumbling. I just opened up to the class and one particular student, and then pretty soon the whole class was involved. And how do you organize, like, how do we get this organized? So we have our batteries and our chargers, and they spent half an hour today just, oh, I think we need to do this. Started laying it out. And next thing you know, boom. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Sometimes you just need to step back and let, as much as we sometimes want to be in control, you need to kind of step back and let them go. And
let creativity happen.
Yeah.
Hey?
It was so cool to see at the end. I took a picture of it so that if I move it, I can see what they put it back to what they did. But it's just so cool to see multiple minds who sometimes you think like, oh, they're not really liking this, or you're kind of wondering. And then they're just in there and so
getting busy.
Yeah.
And that goes with what Justin was saying too about humility, right? Like having that humility to step out of the way and just letting things happen. Like safely, but
yes, safely in the gauntlet.
Yeah. When you have 35 other kids trying not to cut their hands off.
Okay, so there's I'll ask you guys a question.
Sure.
So there's a question there's a question for you. Then how do you, because I know this is something that all shop teachers struggle with, but you know, when I have friends that are like, man, it just, what you do just looks awesome. You know, it just, man, it's so awesome, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you're seeing me and 5 out of the 20 students that are in the classroom, you know, or sometimes it's 2 out of the 20 students that are in that classroom. You know, what do you do with the other 15 or the 18? Or like, how do you either, I guess the word I'll use is interact, but how do you manage that? Because that's the part that, you know, nobody sees, like all of our friends that aren't shop teachers. That's the part they don't see.
You wanna go first?
Ah, that's a hard one. It depends.
your head's on a swivel constantly, right?
I'm listening for machines. I'm listening for the blades kind of winding down for potential kickbacks. I'm, you know, you get a kid that's pushing a board through a router a bit too quick and you can hear it kind of bogging down. And for me, it's that listening part and trying to position myself to be able to scan. And I've got each different level does 2 or 3 different projects. So I've got, we both have mixed classes. So, you know, it could be 9 or 10 projects going on at once. And sometimes there is downtime depending on your machines and what students are doing. And I think that's the battle that I don't think we'll ever be able to fully come to the answer with it. Like it's constantly you think of these ways to better interact or engage everybody. And sometimes it falls apart. Sometimes it works really good when you step back. I don't know. I struggle with that every day. And
it's tough. Like I'm constantly same thing, listening, right? I'm listening for the crispy sizzling bacon welder sound. And if I'm not hearing that, if something's going wrong, okay, I got to go there. But I'm also got to be over here because these kids are going to chop this, you know, use the saw and cut this. And this kid is designing something on fusion so that he can, you know, cut it out with the plasma table. But I'm lucky because I have you probably have a classroom lab kind of area and then the shop area attached to each other, I'm assuming. So I cycle it through where I split my class into thirds, and I have one day, one third is in the lab working on their coursework, and then the other third is in the fabrication area working on their tin boxes and that kind of stuff, metal fab, and then the other third is welding, and then they switch every day. And then I usually have an educational assistant with me, and she hangs out in the computer lab to watch those guys, and then I'm floating between the fab and the welding bays. But yeah, I think listening is the biggest one. You know what sounds shouldn't be happening, but when a kid starts yelling, and like it freaks me out every time. Kids like, ah! And I'm like, I run over. I'm like, what's going on? Oh, I'm just so excited. This weld, look at this. And I'm like, don't yell. I think you're like dying. Because that's the biggest thing, is just trying to avoid kids getting hurt. But
I think it's funny that both of you talked about noises, shop noises. Yeah. And it's like, it just is something that you just become accustomed to, I guess, as you're a shop teacher. Cause I find myself doing that all the time. Listening to blades binding. And I've got two kids. We have two lathes right now that we're turning. So listening to that, you know, what the sound should sound like as they're chipping away at that thing versus if they're getting too aggressive with it or if they're not at the right angle, like all of those things make noises that stick out in your mind. So I told years ago, I told a couple of shop friends, like I jumped on a podcast that they were doing. It was about shop class stuff. And I had told them that like one of the hardest things I had to learn as a shop teacher right away was how to like pace yourself even as a teacher, you know, to like, how do you get through a day? And the thing that really caught me off guard when I first started teaching, like my first year, was I grew up in construction. I was used to building. I would go work, hard days. I mean, they were tough days, but, 12, 14 hours framing, setting trusses, and then building a deck that night out in 100 degree heat, you know. And I, when I was younger, you know, I could run all day and do that and do it the next day. And then I go and I get my first teaching job, and I'll never forget like my first like three or four nights of teaching. And in my mind, I'm going, well, I'm at school from, 7:30 to 3:30. I mean, I got 4 to 6 hours of work time left, in the day. And I remember my first couple of days, I would get to 3:30 in the afternoon and I would like, I'm having a brain aneurysm. Like I just couldn't function. I would be so exhausted. I couldn't think, and it was a different kind of tired. And it was like a mental just draw on me. And I would just come home and like pass out those first few days because I was just like you said, that when you're watching over students and you're having to like listen and jump and you're floating from side to side, this student to that student to this student to that student, and you're going through all that, it's a real struggle. And you don't realize it, but when you get to 3:30 in the afternoon and you finally like get to sit down, it just hits you like a ton of bricks all at the same time. So that was one of the hardest things I had to learn.
Totally.
I went through the exact same thing. Yeah. Go home, 4 o'clock, you're ready for bed, wake up and get your 16 hours of sleep for the next day. But then that also means you're having a nice busy day. I find when I'm running lots and that tired, it's the shop's functioning good because you're touching in with this student and that student and this student, and it's like, it was a good day. I'm tired, but it's, again, it's a different type. It's not the physical. It's more that like mental wear down of always being on, and yeah, you know,
that's
Oh crap, what's that blade or that blade binding for? Yeah. Oh, the welder's making some weird noises, and you're like, oh, it's just kind of, you're always on.
I forgot edge to order this because this kid wanted to do this. I forgot to. You're managing a business and you're managing risks and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh well.
That's a really good point. I was telling my wife the other day, our spring break is this coming week, and like we fried our conveyor belt on our, we have a drum sander, panel sander at school, and it broke like a week ago. So I haven't had students that have been able to sand anything because we didn't have any backup belts. And so, you know, I've been trying to like get a time in when I could sit down and get that ordered and, you know, get that off to my boss. And, you know, it's like that one little thing, it's in the back of your head, but you're still, you're teaching, but you're having to run a shop, you're having to run a business. And it is I really believe that, you know, now I'll be honest with you, I don't have a lot of grading. You know, I don't know how either of you have your classes structured, but I mean, I'm definitely heavy on the participation and like that type of stuff of grades. And then I sprinkle in some grades of what their actual projects are. But I always tell students, if you're working hard, you're going to get an A. And if you're working hard and working safe, you're going to get an A in my class. But, you know,
somebody that speaks our language on the business side, tool, like
you get it. Yeah.
Some people just don't, like they say, right? Oh, you got the best job. And we do. I absolutely love my job. But there's some days where, you know, you're dealing with your budget. You got to order a part. I've had a thickness sander down for 4 months now waiting for a part. That's holding up my classes and my projects. So now you're trying to figure out what to do and you're on the fly.
Call across the street and get the other shop teacher to lend you a breakaway switch or whatever it was. What was that?
A saw stop cartridge. I had to go to the across the street. I did my internship and had to touch base with my old intern or teacher mentor. Can I borrow a saw stop? Because the kid put his finger through the blade. I don't have an extra one.
Okay, so getting back to the whole like trades in general, what do you think are the most important skill sets that people need to develop when they want to get into this area, into like the carpentry, woodworking kind of area?
My first thing that I always go back to is just resiliency. Like being able, you're going to fail. I've got a couple students right now that I can tell they struggle with, like they're worried to make a mistake. You know, when they're cutting, they'll stand there and we'll talk about where they need to cut, you know, this board at, you know, they're making a cross cut or something like that, where, what tool they need to use, where they need to cut it at. And they'll just be fearful. And I don't know if that's partly just due to they are afraid to make a mistake. I mean, I try my best not to have the shop be a place where they're afraid of me. Like I don't want that. You know, I want them to respect the tools and I want them to respect me and everybody else in here. But I think that a student that isn't afraid to make a mistake, and if they do, then they can problem solve and think about, okay, well, what went wrong? And now I'm going to get back to it. To me, one of the most frustrating things can be when a student they're just trying to hurry up and finish a project and they don't really care about what it looks like. And you're like, hey, well, this needs to be fixed or this needs to be corrected. And they're just like, nah.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm okay with it the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I tell students, like, for example, my intro to wood shop class, we do four projects in the semester, like a picture frame, a box, a cutting board, and a segmented bowl, turnable. And I tell students, I don't put deadlines on any of the four. I don't want you to be rushing to try and hurry up and meet a deadline, because that's not what this class is about. I want you to, you know, if you got to remake a lid three times, then I want you to remake it. And I'm always a little, what's the word I'm looking for? I always feel good about a student who will make a mistake. And then I'll be like, hey, let's go see if we can get this fixed or something. And they just go, okay. And they get right back to it. And they try and problem solve or, you know, think about what they can do differently next time. But that's just it. And I'm sure you guys feel the same way, but I tell my students that like every mistake that has been made in here this semester, I have made 5,000 times. Like, it's not about, you know, you guys, I mean, and I'm an okay woodworker. I do not consider myself like a high-end woodworker by any means. And I just tell them like, but you guys look at the stuff I do and you guys think like, oh wow, he's really good. But I'm like, but I've screwed up 50 picture frames in my life. You know, so I think that part of it is the part to me that I try and impress them upon them the most.
That's cool.
Yeah, I feel like that those mistakes are learning opportunities too, right? It's interesting if a kid makes a really bad mistake and they need to restart, or they do something wrong and they need to restart, how much more confident they are going back through that. Now they've made the mistake and say they're restarting their picture frame and they messed up on the rabbit on the backside or whatnot. And if it comes to the part where, hey, you know what, let's try this again. Having them do it that second time is just phenomenal to sit back and watch and see their confidence. And I think that's right. You need to be able to say, hey, you know, you're going to make mistakes. We got to work through them and let's take those as learning opportunities.
And I think that is a big difference too in students today. And so like, you know, and I try and make my class as different as possible from the core classes that are at school. I don't want them to feel like they're going to come in, and this is nothing against any other teachers or the way anybody else teaches, but I don't want them to come in and sit down for 45 minutes. You know, they've been doing that already for a few hours by the time they get to me. It's like, I want to get them up. I got them for 52 minutes. I want to get them up on their feet. I want to get them moving. We're going to make some mistakes, but let's just get back to it and focus on actively, you know, doing things with our hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tied to those skill sets, top three starting out tools for whether it's the carpentry, timber framing, or woodworking, like what kind of would be your top three starting out, whether you wanted to pick it up as a hobby or a career, let's maybe even just go on a hobby. Like what do you suggest for your top three starting out tools?
I feel like I might have answered this question a little bit differently a few years ago, but literally I'd probably go as simple as a tape measure, a mallet, and a chisel. And just like if that's really where you're starting, because to get good at timber framing, actually, I got a lot better at timber framing when I learned how to just basically carve wood. And it was because I started understanding grain structure way better. You know, and so when you can read grain and then you understand, like, you know, you think about grain, like as like a bundle of straws is a really good example that people use. So like when you start thinking about that, it's like, well, wait a minute, all I need to do is take the chisel through this direction and then bring it back through here. And that removes the material that I didn't want, you know, and that was in the way. Yeah. And so this is my first semester teaching timber framing to high school students this year. And I've noticed students really start to understand not only hand tools, but also grain structure. Like those are the two things that I've tried to get them to understand. And it's kind of cool. I mean, because, you know, you take a circular saw or a table saw, or miter saw, whatever, you technically can make whatever cut that you want with those power tools, but hand tools, they're not as forgiving. Like if you're using the wrong hand tool in the wrong direction, you're not going to get a very good looking result. And so you really have to know and respect those tools. So,
yeah,
that's awesome. Well, Justin, this has been awesome. I just want to say thank you so much for rushing home from the shop, from the school. And spending some time with us today, allowing us and our listeners to get to know you a little better, and also just where you came from and what you value. It's been really cool hearing your stories and hearing just like the anecdotes and everything you have going on and inspiring, like building houses. That's incredible. So thank you for coming on the Builder Sessions this week. We really appreciate it.
Well, guys, I really appreciate you asking me on. I mean, it was a fun conversation, and hopefully we'll get to meet up someday. That's my favorite part of all this stuff, yeah, is getting to meet the people that, you know, you follow. So
speaking of follow, where can people find you? And two questions, where can people find you, and what do you have going on right now outside of teaching, whether it's through social media, anything you want to promote?
I will be honest with you. I feel overwhelmed right now in what I kind of have upcoming here over the next like 6 months to a year, to possibly working on a couple things that might even become longer term things than that. But the easiest way to find me is just on Instagram. It's at Dietrich and Sons. Just Dietrich, the letter N, and then Sons. And then I'm most active there. I do have a YouTube channel that I haven't posted on much. I have some plans though of some things that I want to do that I'm getting ready to start right now, that I'm hoping to like put up on YouTube. And I'll go ahead and share this too here. My other plan is, I've already started like the process for, I'm trying to do like an online timber framing class that will be available on, if you've heard of like Teachables, have either of you heard of that?
Yeah. Or like a Skillshare or something, is that similar?
Yeah, what's different, I guess, is that Teachables is normally through your own website. So it's not like, like Skillshare is a website that you'll go to.
Gotcha.
And then you can go look at anybody, right? Whereas Teachables is you're offering an online class. People can jump on your website and then go take that class.
That's cool.
So I've got a few things that I'm working on there that I'm hoping to kind of launch it like this fall, I think. I've got some timber ends that I'm doing this summer out at the Makers Camp. I don't know if you guys know, like out where Jimmy DiResta is at. The Austin Handel, who is the guy that his family owns a big like campground out there. And to me, the Makers Camp has been one of the most enjoyable, like get together, like maker get togethers, because it's all about hands-on stuff. There's a lot of blacksmiths out there. Cool. I approached Austin a couple of years ago about doing a timber frame. So if you go back through my Instagram account, you'll see like back in October of 21, we stood a timber frame. We're going to be doing that again this summer. So we're going to have what's called a timber in July out in New York. And then we will stand it at Makers Camp in October. So it's like a two-part thing. Cool. I'm going to be offering some classes here. I live in Illinois, and kind of my longer term goal is I'm building out a shop. I have a shop here, but I want like a really like high end building that people like picture a workshop slash cabin, like all rolled up into one. And so it's a building that's on our property that I'm going to be renovating this spring and summer and into fall. And my wife and I, we want to have like events with it. We want to host different types of events. One of those types of events being like workshops that people can come out to. And so, yeah, so it's just, I do construction on the side. I still run a construction business over the summer. So I feel overwhelmed, but it's all good stuff.
I'm overwhelmed listening to you. Good grief.
I feel overwhelmed, but it's like, but the truth is like, and I know you guys will know this, like it's all good stuff and I don't want to give up on any of it. Like I want to keep it going. Like I like meeting people. I like getting people together and doing these timber ends. And like, I want to have like, for example, at my place, like I'd love to have just a weekend where like, I don't know if you guys know, like somebody like Chris Cash or somebody like that, that's a blacksmith. Like, you know, he's, I think on Instagram, he's like Mount Phillips Metalworks or something like that. But anyways, people like that, but I'd love to like pay somebody like that to come out to my place for 2 or 3 days. And then people can come, you know, 10 to 12 people can come take a class with him, you know, and spend like an intimate amount of time with people like that, where they can do like a deep dive into one specific subject. And you know, that's kind of like a longer term goal that I'm trying to build out the shop for. So
that sounds awesome.
Just doing different stuff like that.
So, and yeah. when you enjoy it too, right? That changes the whole thing. Some people don't maybe necessarily understand that, but when you enjoy it and you're just consumed by it, sometimes it can go a little too far one way. But I don't know. When I enjoy, as all of us, right, you enjoy your own little unique little building with your hands, and it's just awesome. Yeah. I wish for some people that maybe don't have a passion like that, once you get one, it feels so good.
Well, and you know what's kind of interesting too is like, because I'm like, as I don't want to use the word anti-technology, but I'm like as old school as can be. But at the same time, I'm like refreshed with social media and stuff, because I've been able to meet so many cool people. But I just, you know, I can jump on Instagram at night or YouTube or whatever, and I can go watch a video and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, whoever, like, whatever this is they're making or whatever they're doing. And it's like, I don't like the one thing, like, I love watching people do leather work. Like, I love leather work. I'm horrible at it. I'm absolutely horrible at it. I'm making a sheath for like an axe at school, but that's like something that I try and incorporate with my students too. Is like, I just want them to like, you know, make a leather bookmark or something like that. Yeah. Like, just do something that they can take home with them. And, you know, maybe, you know, a few years down the road, maybe they'll be, I've done some leather work before, and maybe they want to pick it up on their own. Yeah. So.
And that's the goal, inspiring people to pursue their passions.
Right.
Find a passion and pursue it. Yeah.
There you go.
Awesome. Right. Well, Justin, thanks again for coming on the show. We wish you well, and go check out all in the show notes, all of the social media, the YouTube, and the website will be in there. So thanks once again for coming on.
Awesome. Guys, thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a fun conversation.
Big thanks to Justin Dietrich today for taking some time away and sharing his stories and experiences with us.
For everything he has going on, check out our show notes for all his social media accounts. And thank you guys for listening. This show wouldn't be happening without you, and we appreciate it. Please share and subscribe. And hopefully this episode inspired you to get out and grab some tools and build something awesome.